Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What makes running such an addictive pastime? People take up the sport for all different reasons. Some seek fitness or personal challenge. Others crave either companionship or solitude. But there's no denying that once bitten by the running bug, competitive and recreational athletes alike find there is nothing like a great run to make a good day. Just ask the thousands of North Texans signed up for this year's Capital One Bank Dallas YMCA Turkey Trot. It's the largest Thanksgiving race in the country. Runner, writer, and blogger Chris Cooper identifies with all of that healthy passion and has collected hundreds of interesting facts about good ideas for runners in his new book, Long May You Run. Chris, welcome to Think.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
So this started out for you as a collection of all the things that runners should do before they die. Is that right?
Yes, it was. That was the title of my original manuscript. And to give you an idea what that meant, for example, for me personally, years ago I took a trip to England. And my fondest memory of my vacation there was not Buckingham Palace or Stonehenge or the Tower of London. It was actually finding and running on the track where Roger Bannister ran the first sub-4-minute mile. Now, only a runner would think of that. But that's an example of one of the 100 things I thought every runner should do before they die.
And how did you realize there was an entire book here and there were other things that you could add to it? Was it hard to stop at 100?
Well, in a way, I sat down one day and had that idea, and I started jotting down some of those 100 things. And after about 10 minutes, it came to about 50. And I thought, wow, there might be some potential here. And I worked on it, polished it, and I was fortunate enough to find an agent, and then she worked with me. And from there on, it grew to about maybe twice the size. So that's where it is today.
So I'm sure that throughout the hour we will hear from people who want to add their own ideas. But talk a little bit about that trip to England. You have to sort of do some research ahead of time to find these great places to run. Can you talk about your favorite strategies if you're going to be on vacation or out of town on business to find a great place to go?
I like all my vacations. I like to do research ahead of time. But it can be quite simple, like a trip to San Francisco. I thought it'd be great just to run across the Golden Gate Bridge, and that is actually one of the 100 things. And when I write an essay about one of those things, I just don't list it. I talk about a little history behind that particular item. I talk about particular races that are involved in that item or things in the community that a runner can do. So I research it. And for example, Roger Bannister, he's a hero to many people, so I knew that he went to Oxford, and I didn't know where the track was, so I just did a little investigative work when I was there. And there's a little blue plaque that designates that as the official oval. And I think, as I wrote in my book on that item, thousands of people go to Oxford every year as tourists, and they go to the library or they go to the botanical gardens. But I'd say a few percentage, if any, no, the track is right down the road, and to me that was a great find and a very fond memory.
What about things like trail runs or different routes in different cities? Are dedicated runners pretty happy to share their favorite places to go, or do they want to keep those quiet?
Oh, sure. No, they're very upfront about it. Runners are great people. They want to help other runners from out of town. A lot of hotels you go to have running routes around their hotels. There are several websites that, especially for travelers, that they can log on to and key in the destination where they are or they're going to, and then you can get a list of runs that are recommended by other runners.
How do we know that our bodies are born to run?
Well, mine had long legs and good lungs, so that was my excuse. I never knew that until I did some research, and I found a research by, mentioned before, this has been published before, but there was a press release by Harvard University anthropologist Daniel Lieberman and his colleague at the University of Utah. And it was a very interesting article about how humans, I won't say evolved, but how humans had certain characteristics like an Achilles tendon, shorter toes, shorter forearms, longer legs that would help them run, as opposed to something like chimpanzees. And I have like a chart of that in the book, that many people see the similarity between us and chimpanzees, but when it comes to characteristics for running, only humans have them.
Yeah, we had somebody on the show, I don't know, about a year ago, who talked about a theory that perhaps our ancestors might have outrun their prey rather than getting them with any particular weapons. They just chased them down until these prey animals just fell to the ground and the humans kept running.
Sure. There's a term for that. It's called persistence hunting. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it was hours, sometimes days that they would keep running after the prey, whether it's a deer or an antelope or something like that, and they would run it to exhaustion. Looking at the other alternative, running fast instead of long endurance, running fast would keep humans away from the animals that were preying on them.
Right. So some people love to run alone. Others really like to have a friend or a whole group of people along with them. What does it take to find the right running partner?
A good question. My best friend just came up from North Carolina a couple weekends ago, and we had a great 12-mile run together. And while we're running, we don't talk about running. We talk about every other thing, catching up, because we're at that point that we're good enough runners that running is second nature, and we enjoy it, and we enjoy being out and just chatting with each other. Finding the person, it's good if there's someone to hold you accountable and vice versa. I talk about finding a running partner in the book, and I talk about how beneficial running in groups is at least once or twice a week. And if you belong to a running club, that is a great start. And within that club, you can find someone who you can connect with and who's maybe on the same level as you as far as a runner. And it helps not just to chat along the way. It helps someone to look at your running style, and if they get to know you well, they can notice maybe a kink in your running stride or something wrong with you. Basically, it's someone there to call you at 6:30 in the morning on a Saturday if you have a long run scheduled and to get you out of bed.
Mm-hmm. So you can't say, it's raining today, or it's too cold or too hot.
Right. Yeah. They can say, I'm coming over right now.
Yeah, let's talk about that issue of running form and maybe somebody else noticing it, because you talk about, you know, the way that a good runner is supposed to sort of hold his or her body. And I suppose it's hard to diagnose this for yourself.
Right. A lot of the experts say, and I agree with them, that first of all, if you're a runner and you're not injured, or you don't have many injuries or many nagging things, in most cases, your form is okay. It may not be perfect, but they say not to fool around with it too much, because you may do more harm than good. If you are finding yourself injured many times, it can very likely be your form. There are many books that talk about it. Qi running is one type of research. It's a fairly new discipline that certain running style, but there are many books out there, and I mention them. My book is sort of has its own niche, but I do mention several books about training and several other inspirational books that are good help for people looking to improve their running and improve their form.
A lot of people like to run with their dogs, Chris, and you remind us that it's important to give the animals time to get themselves in shape. Can you speak about how you go about that?
Right. In fact, it's very popular now are dogs with humans. Humans don't race each other. They race other humans with dogs. And, there are many things you should do. First of all, there are a lot of dogs that are bouncing off the walls that really need to get out and exercise.
Yeah.
And some people don't realize this. Dogs love to run, love to be a companion. They won't comment on your running form. They won't get bored by your account of your latest race or your training regimen. If you take your dog running, keep it fun for the dog. Don't overdo it. It's sort of like a human training. You start slow with the dog, walking and running combined, and then just work up to various distances. And if there's a mile fun run for the dog, or you just want to take a dog with you on your training runs in the morning, that's fine. They'll work up to it, and you just have to be careful.
And they actually might need some more days off than we need.
Sure. It's not just like if the human says, well, a few days off will help me. They need more time. They need more water. And dogs, you know, sweat differently than humans do, so you have to be aware of that. They sweat through their tongues. And you have to think about, while we have running shoes on, they don't. You have to think about their running pads on, well, especially Dallas, on hot concrete and hot roads. It's better to have them in parks and maybe on a track or some dirt roads.
So the one place dogs would not be welcome on a run is when they come bounding over the neighbor's fence and snarling at you. What are some good ways to stay safe from other people's dogs who aren't happy to see you running by their house?
I'd advise them to look at the Humane Society's website that talks specifically about that. But I've been bitten by a dog running, and
it's scary.
It's scary, and it's a shame. There are many. I do a lot of trail runs, and more often than not, I'll be running around a blind corner, and there'll be a dog loose without a leash because the owner, although well-intentioned, may not think anyone else is there out there.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is, well, according to the Humane Society, one thing to do is try to be aware of what's ahead. If you hear a dog barking, things like that, slow down, turn a different way. If you can't avoid a confrontation, you know, stop running. They say don't approach a dog by the front or the back. If you have to approach one, approach it by the side. Never look at the dog directly in the eyes. They might see that as being aggressive. And just stop and let the dog smell you. And that's not what I did when I got bitten. I slowed down to a jog, and it took a nip out of me. And the owner, of course, said, oh, it has its own rabies shots and things like that. But it's a little jarring for someone to get bitten.
This might strike you as a silly question, but how come in the like 70s and 80s, everybody called it jogging, and now everybody calls it running?
There's sort of an elitist attitude toward running, and I fall prey to that. If someone says, "How far did you jog today?"
Well, don't ask that.
I'm not a jogger. I'm a runner.
Yeah.
I think when it became popular in the 70s, it was jogging, meaning a lot slower running, and it was more a fitness thing. And then I think with the 72 Olympics and the success of Frank Shorter, many people got more interested in running, not just the college or the elite people, but others. And I think as the pace quickened and more people entered races, there were joggers, which are great joggers, turn into runners, or they don't have to if they don't want to. It's just a matter of speed. But I don't drive down the road and say, oh, that person's a jogger or that person's a runner. I just say they're all runners to me, and I'm just glad they're out in the roads running.
Chris Cooper is my guest. He's a runner, writer, and blogger, not jogger. His new book is called Long May You Run. We'll resume our conversation in just a moment and would love for you to join us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is runner, writer, and blogger Chris Cooper. His new book is called Long May You Run. Join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. I want to talk a little bit about regional places to run because several of them feature in your book. We'll talk about Dallas in a minute, but first we should give a shout out to Fort Worth, which has one of the best race names that actually makes a list in your book. Are you remembering the one that I'm thinking of?
You can refresh my memory.
It's the Jiggle Butt Run in Arlington.
Yeah.
And I guess there is sort of like, you know, some of these silly names, are these to encourage people who might not have thought of themselves as racers to try this and see how great it can be?
I think so. In fact, it's funny you mentioned that. I've gotten several emails from through my website from race directors who have read the book, and they were so happy to see their race as one of the best race names, and that they have told me that they like, for example, the Rumba and the Lumber in Lumberton, North Carolina. He said, you know, we had like 20 different names we were going over, and it used to be a very elite race. That's who we were trying to get, but we thought of this new name, and the people loved it, and now it's more for, you know, families and beginning runners. And And I think instead of just, you know, XX 10K run or something, a funny name does bring people out. And it's nice to see on a T-shirt as well.
Yeah. Dallas ranks 15th of best running cities in the United States.
Right. That was according to a survey by Runners World. And it was pretty comprehensive in what they looked at. They looked at the number of acres set out in the city for parks. They looked at the number of running clubs. They got some advice from an online poll as well. They looked at air quality, all different things. And, yeah, you should be happy that Dallas is up there and Austin is up there too.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of beautiful places to run around here. Of course, it gets very hot, but I think once you're accustomed to it, it doesn't seem like such a big deal.
I'm out here outside of Philadelphia, and I found it. I need about 2 weeks of steady running in the heat and humidity to get used to it for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I've been out to Dallas several times. I have in-laws in the town of Rowlett, and I run there, but we've only been visiting during Thanksgiving and Christmas, so I can't attest to the hot weather out there, but I know if it's 80 right now, I'm sure it does get quite hot there in the summer.
Yeah. 1-800-933-5372 is our number. You can also send email to think@kera.org. We have an email here from Aram who asks, why until the mid-70s were women not allowed to run in the Boston and other marathons?
Unfortunately, the thinking was women wouldn't be able to survive running 26.2 miles.
Hmm.
And I was fortunate that one of the contributors to my book was Catherine Switzer, who was the first woman to officially run the marathon. And if you or other listeners out there remember, she was the one where she entered the race under the name Kay Switzer, so they couldn't tell she was a woman. And in the race, a race organizer spotted her and tried to actually physically push her off the course until her boyfriend flattened that guy, and they kept running. And she said, I've actually become friends with her through this book, and she said she had to keep going because she said if I didn't do it, if I didn't run those 26.2 miles, people would never think that women could do that. So that was the predominant thinking back then, that it was just for men because women couldn't run that distance. There was no way.
Where do you stand on the excellent shoes versus barefoot controversy?
I think it's a great controversy. I think it's getting a lot of people excited about going into their running store and talking to the people there. I think unless you're a real habitual barefoot runner to begin with, I think barefoot running has a place in running, but it should only be a component of a running program. There are many coaches that have their college athletes run barefoot to strengthen their feet. And I think that's a major reason anyone should do it. It strengthens their feet, but they only do it a few times a week. I myself after a run, I'll go to a track in the infield grass, and maybe I'll run in bare feet two or three laps. And it's very important for people to realize that after you're running in these overly cushioned shoes for all these years, your feet are going to need a lot of time to get used to running barefoot. Again, many people would not recommend it for running in races or long runs, things like that. I'd see it as just a strengthening component. And what a lot of people are telling runners is that run in as little a shoe as possible, meaning don't go for the overly cushioned, the big heels, things like that. Minimalist shoe is what they're like the big buzzword right now.
It's so interesting because it's going back to what people were doing 100 years ago.
Sure. A lot of the elite runners in the 70s would take a lot of the cushioning off their shoes and just run in those. And they get by with that.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go to Jason calling from Huntsville, Alabama. Hi, Jason.
Hi, Chris. Great show.
Thanks.
I was calling because my father was a pretty big runner in the 70s, right before I was born. And I always remember him telling me that my uncle, who was probably about 10, 15 years older than my dad, and several of our older neighbors used to really get upset with my dad when they would see him running through the neighborhood. And my uncle swore up and down that my father was gay because he ran. And I was just wondering where that, it seemed, my father made it seem like it was a common attitude back then. And I was just wondering if the author had ever heard of that and knew what caused it.
Wow, I've never heard of that.
I've heard of that in relation to a women's runner. In fact, Joan Benoit I read an article about an interview with her, and she said when she got interested in running, before she became really well known, she'd be running in the roads, and if she heard a car coming, she would stop and walk because she was very self-conscious that someone would think she's a little strange, that she wanted to run.
Hmm.
I haven't heard too much of that. I know. Sure, a lot of acquaintances over the years ask, you know, why do you run, or what's fun about running 26.2 miles? I think there are a lot of people that you'll never change their minds, that they might think runners are crazy. But again, a lot of runners see golfers as, you know, crazy. They see a golf course as the only reason for a cross-country run.
It does seem like one of those things, Chris, that sort of divides people. You might have respect for one side or the other, but people who love to run just can't conceive of why somebody else wouldn't. And I think it goes the other way. People who hate to run think, I don't think I could ever enjoy going 20 miles.
Well, and that's part of the reason I wrote this book. It's for runners of all abilities or those who are thinking of starting a running club or a running program, but maybe didn't have the courage or the interest, because there are a lot of anecdotes. In it, we talked about the 100 things every runner should do before they die. That remains the foundation of the book, but my agent and I added a lot more things. We added some inspirational pieces. We added some profiles of Hall of Fame runners. We added some races that everyone should run, and we're trying to exhort people to just see if they like it. And they're many things that can challenge runners or inspire them and encourage them in this book that I hope will do that, will make people not be afraid to run or change their attitudes about running.
Best running movie, Chariots of Fire?
Yes. Now, this is very subjective, but that's mine. And I mentioned that the music is in a lot of people's iPods. And, I mentioned that not just because it's running, but the good acting and the great running sequences on the track and on the beach, and very, very memorable run movie. I also, in that list, mentioned Marathon Man. Probably not many people know about that. But
that's like a dental movie in my mind.
Exactly. And I have a comment on the list saying, after seeing this movie, you may not want to visit your dentist ever again.
Let's talk a little bit about running on the beach, because it seems so idyllic, and it's hard.
Yeah, well, that turns out to be one of the things every runner should do before they die, or as my agent changed it to say, one of the things every runner should do at least once in their life.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard when I do it, I usually run on the wet sand along the, where the water's edge, because it's a little stiffer. But that's sort of going back to the barefoot running controversy, because a lot of people think it must be easy, and they'll run up and down the beach, and their calves and their feet and their ankles and tendons will get sore. It's great freeing experience, but you just have to not overdo it.
What are the special joys of running in the rain?
I mention that because I've heard that from a lot of other people, not necessarily myself, but I included it. In fact, many of the 100 things I talk about are from other runners.
Mm-hmm.
I included a lot of email requests and things like that, and I got a lot of responses. That was one of them. A lot of people talk about the freshness of the air, just exhilarating running in a downpour. This is a chance where they may be the only one out there, and for many people, that's a solitary run, or the best thing.
Yeah. Another thing that really comes through here is the idea that some people run because they love having a companion, and for other people, it's that one escape they have in a really busy life.
Yeah. I think everyone needs to run alone once in a while, and everyone needs to run with a partner or with a group once in a while. Yeah, I find, and I've heard this, countless times, people say they do their best thinking during their runs. I like to run in the mornings, and it's a way to, I feel, just exhilarated after I run, just like if someone had 5 cups of coffee. I feel very exhilarated, have more energy for the day. It's very, for people that don't like the solitude, they should try it. Get your thoughts together. On the other hand, running with someone, as I mentioned before, is a great way to have camaraderie, have someone hold you accountable. I know Dallas has the DRC, Dallas Running Club, and I'd encourage people there, or the Fort Worth Runners Club, to get involved with them. They sponsor a lot of races. You can my local area has workouts in the morning that you can go to if you want. They have runs at night where maybe 6 or 10 people show up, and it's just a bunch of great people to go running with.
You talk about the interest that a lot of people have now in running backwards, and I guess it uses different muscles and strengthens balance and things like that, but it also sounds sort of dangerous.
Yeah. especially dangerous to first-timers who don't look where they're going.
Yeah.
I've seen them on the tracks, and I used to think that was pretty silly. And then I did some research, and I found that there's some pretty good runners that are backwards runners. And like you said, it is good to give your body a little change. I mentioned doing a track workout, maybe after running the forward, to run a couple laps backward. You're landing on your toes, and you're using different muscles. And a lot of good running form talks about balancing the muscles, and from the quads versus the hamstrings. And backwards running helps that keep that correct proportion in line.
So this is not something you suggest we do through the neighborhood. It's best on the track in a controlled environment.
Right. Mm-hmm. Don't do it in a neighborhood. Don't do it with any loose dogs around. Don't do it in the rain either.
You also have something in here about the idea that a personal record might be more meaningful than maybe where you finish compared to 2,000 other people in a race with you.
Yeah. And runners call it a PR.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, I hope to PR in the Dallas White Rock Marathon. For many, I think especially when runners get older and they realize they may not be able to run win a race or win their age group anymore, there's that personal record, how fast they've run a certain distance before. And it's one of the easiest ways to get a new personal record is to run a distance you've never done before, which is pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But there's it is, I think, important. It's a nice goal to have if you can, they run that 5K race, that 5K distance, 5 seconds faster than you did 3 years ago. Or you can have a personal record on a hilly course. You can have a personal record on a course that's flat. You can have a personal record on your trail run. So it's one other thing that keeps people motivated to run. They don't have to finish at the top of the race. They can just it's like a personal thing that they can relate to.
Chris, what are the benefits of keeping a running log?
It's good to keep to write down a number of things: what you were feeling during the run, how you were when you woke up that morning. It's good to keep it account of a race for your training for a race coming up, to work backwards and to pencil in how far you'd like to run this day, what kind of workout you had this day. I think a lot of runners like to put on the calendar or write down, keep track of their running. And when I talk about keeping a running log, as I said, it's more than just recording miles. Record the temperature for the day, and record how you felt after the run. And you can look over for weeks and months and see sort of what worked and what didn't work. And I think that really helps the running program.
So even put, you know, what you ate before you went and things like that?
Exactly.
Yeah. And you suggest, for a lot of people who get so busy, put it on the calendar that you're planning to run Tuesday from 4 to 5 or something.
Right. Part of the book is a collection of contributors' advice and recommendations from elite runners, contributors, which I contacted. And I was grateful for their reaction. I was not a known writer, and these people were very generous in their responses, very excited to help me out here. The particular one you mentioned, I think, is from Don Cardong, a senior writer for Runner's World. He's the one that said, look, it's hard enough to find time for a run, so yeah, put it on your PDA, or put it on your calendar, so you treat it like a business appointment.
And then it counts.
Yep.
Chris Cooper is my guest. He's a runner, writer, and blogger, and author of the new book, Long May You Run. You can join our conversation by calling 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's. You can learn more at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is runner, writer, and blogger Chris Cooper. His new book is called Long May You Run. Join our conversation by sending email to think@kera.org or by calling 1-800-933-5372. Chris, we hear a lot about listening to our bodies. What exactly does that mean?
It's interesting. I talked about the elite runners that contributed to my book, and I asked them for a running tip for the readers, and so many of them came back and said, listen to your body, don't overdo it, get enough rest. And I was surprised, because these are runners whose lives depend on running fast and winning races, and they were telling us, you know, take it easy, and have fun as well. Listening to your body just means being aware of any little hints that any of your muscles or joints are telling you, and know when to back off and when it's okay. Obviously, if you're a very serious runner, you're training for a big race, and there's some tightness here or muscles are tired, that's part of it, and some runners are able to work through that. Anything more serious, though, they should listen to their body, listen to that little clue that maybe their workouts are a little too much. Maybe they should take a rest day or take an easy day after a hard day, things like that. I hear that a lot, and again, Susie Faber Hamilton, one of the best runners ever for America in the 1500, is one who said, listen to your body, and she also said, have fun while you run.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. We'll go back to the phones now, and Brittany is on the line in Dallas. Hi, Brittany.
Hi there, Chris. I'm a longtime former runner because I blew out my knees. I could relate to what you're saying. And I live out of White Rock, so I love being around runners. I'm going to be a course guide for probably the 8th and 9th year at the White Rock Marathon. And I just wonder if there's any hope. I don't want to have knee replacements, so I do walk as much as I can out at the lake. But I just, if there is any hope for me to be able to get back into running, I would. So I'm looking forward to reading your book. But just if anything you'd heard about advances, or I'm always thinking, what can we do? What could I do to get back into running? So thank you so much for what you do.
What do you think, Chris?
Oh, sure. Well, thank you. I'm sorry, Brittany, to hear about your knee. I'm not an orthopedic surgeon, but I can say that one of the new pieces of advice for runners, whether they're racing or working out, is taking walk breaks. I think I don't know your exact condition, and I don't presume to, but there's a chance that many people like you can run a little bit in a race or a workout and then walk. It's funny because a lot of times runners in a race will pass someone who's walking, and later that person who had been walking passes the person who's been running. And taking a walk break after 10 minutes of running, or doing a mile of running and then a walk for a half mile, or after 2 minutes of running, take a 2-minute walk break. Walk breaks are good. They're an excellent way to keep the body less fatigued, to rest the muscles, and to encourage people that may not be in top shape or may be coming off injuries to actually enter races.
We have an email here from Rebecca in San Diego, California, who wants to know what you think about ostensibly young and healthy runners who end up collapsing in half or full marathons. There was someone who collapsed at White Rock a couple of years ago. Is it an underlying health issue as far as you know? I know the book doesn't really focus on this, but people are clearly curious about it. Did you research this at all?
Well, I've just from what I read, I know that many people, from what I've heard, even one of the marathon hopefuls for the Beijing Olympics collapsed and died, unfortunately, in the marathon qualifying run in Central Park. A lot of times they find out that there was some systemic problem with some part of the person's body, whether they had a weak heart to begin with or weak lungs to begin with or something like that. Yes, I'm not an expert, but I've heard that it's not necessarily just overrunning, but maybe they haven't visited their doctor and had an annual checkup for a while, which is something that happened to Jim Fix. That's probably the most famous case.
Right.
He came from a family with heart problems, and while he was a great runner and wrote about being healthful, he neglected visiting a doctor, and he had a heart condition and died because of that.
Jumping to this, it's unrelated, but you write about some really elite runners here who recommend occasionally taking a walking break in a long distance race. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, as I said, answering Brittany's question, that it's not just people older age. It's they recommend it for people any age, any type of race, any type of workout. That walking will relax the muscles. It gives, we're talking about balance again. It gives balance again to using different muscles as opposed to running, and I think it helps people who may not be in good shape or may be overwhelmed by running such a long distance or just going out and trying to run on their own. If they know that it's not bad to just walk for a while, maybe run to the phone pole, walk to the next telephone pole, things like that, mm-hmm. It's a good strategy, and I think more people should be doing that.
Have you done an ultra marathon of any kind?
No, that's of the 100 things I recommend, that's one of them, and that's one of the ones that's still on my list. And I'm not sure I had good luck running marathons. My actual, I'm better at the faster, shorter races, like a 5K or 10K. Mm-hmm. It's still in the back of my mind. And when Chris talks about ultra marathons, that's the definition is any race or run past the 26-point mile marathon distance. A lot of the popular ones are 30 miles, 50K races, And, of course, the granddaddies are the 100-mile races, like the Western States 100-mile in the California mountains.
Yeah, it's funny that the only reason anybody remembers Leadville, Colorado is because of that race they have.
Right.
That seems like an incredibly hard thing to train for, and I know that you've talked to people who've done these things. I mean, how do you have a regular life and get ready for a race like this?
You know, if you go with the attitude that you're not necessarily going to race it, but that you're just going to cover the miles and mm-hmm. run it, that's a big thing right there. As for me, sometimes I ran several marathons, but I don't do them anymore. But when I go out for a nice run on the weekends, before I'd think, well, I have to run faster, and I have a large pace or a fast pace, and I after an hour and a half or 2 hours, I'm beat. These days, I'll just slow it down, and you'd be amazed how much you can cover at a significantly slower pace. You're still running or you're still jogging, and it can add up. So these people are. These races, these 50K races and 30-mile races, are becoming popular. People, they don't have to race them. They don't have to exhaust themselves. If they just do a steady pace, if they do take walk breaks, anyone can do it.
So I think people who have never even strapped on a pair of running shoes know about carbing up. Is there anything that you absolutely shouldn't eat the night before a big race?
I know what you shouldn't eat right before the race. Mm-hmm. And I've heard this, a lot of people have problems with eating peanut butter. Before the race, it's the night before the race, the standard carbohydrates, the thing, that still holds. And I'd say stay away from a big meal. You don't overeat, mm-hmm. even if you're eating the right foods. If you eat too much, you'll just feel lethargic in the morning. So that's the advice I'd give. Before a race, they say within an hour of the race, get a good dose of carbohydrates, whether it be a whole wheat muffin, English muffin, a banana, some nuts, some grapes, things like that, because carbohydrates within an hour gives you a good performance boost in the race.
And then during a long race?
Unless you carry food with you, there's not likely to be food on the course.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully you've eaten the day before, and you've had a good snack beforehand. And as you go through the race, you're burning up the glycogen stores, which is what you should do.
So you're not doing those gel packs or whatever they.
You know, I'm not saying not to. Mm-hmm. I just haven't done it yet. And one of the best advice I can give to anyone is, entering a big race, don't do anything different than you have. Don't try drinking. The Gatorade, if you've never done it on your own in practice. Don't try the gel packs if you haven't done it. Don't try a brand new pair of shoes for a race if you haven't worn them for a while. Things like that. You want to keep your regimen the same if it has been working for you.
So what's the latest conclusion with regard to the value or lack thereof of stretching?
The jury is out on that. And I mentioned that. I mentioned that on my blog as well. There have been some studies where they've looked at research. I think it's actually the New England Journal of Medicine looked through study after study, and they found that they're not sure if it's the stretching we do is good after all, because it may do more harm than good, or they're not sure if it's that bad for you. As I said, the jury's still out. A big thing we're hearing now is dynamic stretching versus static stretching. Static stretching is what I've done and what usually we're told to do. That's holding a stretch for 20 seconds, like bringing your leg up behind you and stretching your quad muscle for 20 seconds. That's static, and a lot more people are pointing to dynamic stretching, which is sort of increasing a joint's range of motion by doing something similar to what you'd be doing in a race, like walking fast or jogging before a race, or moving your feet or your toes, something in motion instead of just static and holding something.
So it's almost like a warm-up as much as anything.
Yeah, and when you think about it, that makes sense. They talk about the static stretching we've done. If you do it, and again, that's what I do, and it hasn't bothered me, so I'm not about to change, or I might change slowly. But if you do static stretching, make sure your body is warmed up. Coming home from work at night, do the stretching instead of first thing in the morning when your body's not warmed up yet.
So are you a synthetic fibers guy when it comes to running?
Sort of in between. Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I was in a duathlon, which is a bike and run race, and it was a team race. So I had a guy that worked with my wife. She was a colleague of my wife's. I had never met him. He did the bike part, and I did the running part. And he had all the synthetic fibers. He took caffeine pills. He took salt pills. He had a $5,000 bike like Lance Armstrong rode.
Wow.
And he was really into that. And I was standing there just, shorts, T-shirt, shoes, socks, you know, maybe Cool Max socks, nylon tank top, ready to go.
Did you feel like he was overdoing it?
Oh, yeah. And, but the funny thing was, now that I think about it, it wasn't funny then. He came up to me and said, you know, I think we can win this race. And not to put any pressure on me or anything. But it turns out we did win.
Wow.
But I did better proportionally in the run than he did in the bike. So he thanked me later for sort of saving him.
Can you talk a little bit about the emotional benefit just to you as a human being, like why you keep doing this?
Well, I can go into all the scientific stuff about the endorphins and the neurotransmitters and the dopamine things, and which some say helps the mind. I just I like people, but I grew up only child, and for me, just running out. Running outside and alone was a great way to, number one, keep the stress down and relax, and number two, do something good for my body. When I became more serious about running, I became more serious about what I put in my body, and I ate well, I ate better, I trimmed down, and I watched what I ate. It's just one thing about it is it's convenient, it's a stress reliever. It's recession resistant. You know, it doesn't cost much, and it's great to just go out the door, you know, put some shoes on, run out the door, and run around the block.
And you plan to keep going till you're 100?
Yes, and there are a lot of people that still do, and that's the last chapter in my book. And I hope everyone can follow these things in my book and find enjoyment and find the ways to fill the gaps in their running right now with some of these items I mentioned.
Chris Cooper is a runner, writer, and blogger. His new book is called Long May You Run. Chris, thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Well, thank you, and good luck to all the runners in the Turkey Trots and in the White Rock Marathon coming up.
Absolutely. My name is Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
Think production team includes associate producer Betsy Lewis and engineer Nilofer Arsala. Our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about today's show, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcasts at kera.org/think. And we'd like to hear what you think about Think. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to think@kera.org.